super smelling, fantastic, wonderful fans of the Multimedia Men podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. This is the second episode of the Unbalanced Note, our music podcast. I'm Brian Kluger, and I'm just so happy to be here today. The drugs have taken effect already. It is before 2 p.m., and we are actually seeing physical colors in the air. It's mystifying. I am joined by my co-hosts, the legendary, the mysterious Jacob Douglas. What up?
There's a circle in the dining room.
There is a circle in the dining room. Is it the Circle K?
It's a smoke circle.
It's a smoke circle. How are you doing, man?
You know how I'm doing. I'm great. I should be doing about the same as you, actually.
Yes.
Maybe a couple of steps ahead.
Maybe a little bit ahead, but yes, we're both
same arena.
Taking effect. We're both here to talk about music and life. I've got my water bottle, thanks to the commuter, on Blu-ray in 4K, and we have LaCroix.
Lime LaCroix.
Sponsored.
That would be incredible. I love LaCroix. If you're listening, I'm in.
He's in, folks. He's definitely in. Hopefully you listened to our first show last week where we talked about Kiss, the lovely, lovely 70s, 80s, 90s, and present day band, as well as the first ever one-hit wonder, Lollipop, by Ruby and Ronald.
And numerous other people.
Yes.
The Cordettes.
That made it famous. But we have another one-hit wonder for you today. And our main event, our main band, we're going to discuss thoroughly, Metallica, today. I think it's a good day for Metallica.
Discuss.
But before then, we want to bring up a few items to talk about, because I'm curious on what Jacob has to think about it. Paul Simon of Simon & Garfunkel, he has announced officially his new album called In the Blue Light. Wynton Marsalis, Bill Frisell, Jack DeJohnette, Steve Gadd, and more will appear on the collection of reworked songs. It's a 10-song album coming out. What do you think about this?
You know, when you started down that road just then, I wanted to say, who wants to hear that? But that list of musicians that you just rattled off,
yeah,
that I would listen to it just to hear them. Steve Gadd is an incredible drummer. I think he's played with Clapton for like the last 15 or 20 years. But yeah, those are killer musicians on that. What songs are they? Are they like Simon and Garfunkel or Paul Simon early songs? It says reworked.
Yeah, so I guess this comes out September 7th from Legacy. And I guess this release will coincide with the last part of Paul Simon's farewell tour.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
So, In the Blue Light, this track listing is as follows. One man's ceiling is another man's floor. Then a song called Love. Then a song called Can't Run But. Number four, How the Heart Approaches What It Yearns. Number five, Pigs, Sheep, and Wolves. Six, Renee and Georgette. Magritte with their dog after the war.
What the fuck?
That's a long ass title. Number seven is The Teacher. Number eight, Darling Lorraine. Number nine, Some Folks' Lives Roll Easy. Number 10, Question for the Angels. Have I heard of any of those songs?
I don't know, but that has to be the worst song title list I've ever heard.
I mean, I'm interested
from front
in
to back,
Pigs, Sheep, and Wolves.
Yeah, not. I think I'm going to go back to what I originally was going to say is, who wants to hear that, actually? Those musicians, I don't think those musicians can save those songs if those are the titles. But who knows? I mean, how old is Paul Simon? He's got to be like 70.
He's like 108.
Nah.
Let me look. Paul Simon.
He's still married to Edie Brickell, Dallas native.
Paul Simon was born in 1941, making him 70, was it six? Yeah, 76.
77. Right?
Born in New Jersey, in October, he will be 77.
October what?
13th.
Almost share the same birthday with the man.
Really?
22nd, so October 22nd, people out there, all three of you.
Well, hell's bells, Miss Daisy. He is married to Edie Brickell, yes. They have three children, too.
Yeah, they got in some shit, or he got in some shit recently.
Who?
Paul Simon a couple of years ago.
Well, Carrie Fisher died recently, and he was like, I don't know if he was engaged, or you know, he was married to Carrie Fisher, so maybe that's something like that came out.
Man, that photo of Carrie Fisher from like Return of the Jedi, where she's laying on like the beach somewhere or something, and
it's so hot.
Oh yeah, and then there's another one where like they're laying on the spaceship of some sort
of Jabba, yeah,
her and her body
or double, yeah.
Oh my god, like that photo.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, that one wins the prize.
I'm really curious about these albums. Like what where these songs are. You know?
What's the Paul Simon song?
Yeah, because I'm looking at it right now. And, okay, Renee, original album. Yes, these are all albums from Paul Simon, but they're like maybe songs that you might not heard of.
Once you named the third song, I was like, yeah, these are all original because those song titles are horrible.
Yeah, and they're all on previous Paul Simon albums, most of them from his 2000 album, You're the One. But there's also none from Graceland, if you're wondering.
Well, which, unfortunate. How are we going to get by now?
Interesting. Into the Blue Light. So, I mean, I guess we'll give it a chance since it's Paul Simon's probably the last thing he'll ever.
I promise to be honest, I've never really been a Paul Simon fan. I would, you know, Paul McCartney has.
But even with Bill Frisell, Wynton Marsalis, I mean, and these guys.
Great jazz players and stuff, but. I mean, the Paul Simon stuff that I like, I don't really much care for, like, Graceland. I like the Simon and Garfunkel stuff. Early, early, you know, Paul Simon.
Okay. All right. Well.
To me, like, I don't know. I'm probably more of an Art Garfunkel fan.
So you're on that side of the fence, huh?
Yeah, I mean, he had, like, the cooler kind of, like, he sounded like the cooler personality, maybe, of the two, you know what I mean? He had that more kind of relaxing, like,
well, it's almost like if you compare Paul McCartney and maybe George Harrison, where George Harrison was the more artistic one, but great. Paul McCartney went to the commercial side, which I think is
great comparison. Yeah, totally. But even George's voice, like, George is my favorite Beatle, but
mine too.
He just had that aura of him where, like, he's kind of more like, you know, like hippy dippy, like, hey, it's gonna be cool, man. Like,
for sure,
nothing's ever a big deal.
No, I totally get it.
You know, Paul Simon is more of that kind of like OCD, you know, very precise, you know, meticulous thought.
Yeah.
Stuff. It's got to be perfect every time.
Do you think Garfunkel and Simon will ever do anything together ever again?
Man, yeah. Year of the reunion, right? Well, Paul Simon's having a farewell show. What's to say he can't do? He didn't say he can't have a Simon and Garfunkel farewell show.
Too. True. And farewell tour doesn't mean shit these days, really.
Well, Kiss. Speaking of Kiss, they've been having farewell shows for 12 years.
So, yeah.
You know, nothing new there.
No, I agree. I agree for sure.
But I don't. The whole farewell tour thing is fucking crazy to me. It's like, why do you have to feel the need to do that?
To make one last bit of money, I guess, or give the fans what they want.
Yeah, but if you're going to if you should just do it, though. You shouldn't tell people that, hey, this is your last tour. You should go out there and just let their performance. People will leave going, man, I almost hope that was the last time I saw him because it was that good. You know, if you go into it, the expectation of like, oh, it's a farewell tour. Me, I would kind of get the, okay, well, we're just cashing in. Like you said, it's easy payday. What? Who cares if they play the songs great or not? You know what I mean? If they went out there and just said, hey, the band knew collectively and their managers and stuff, this is the last one. We don't advertise it like that. We just go out there and play our asses off. That would be the way to do it. And, you know, that's something that, like, someone like Tom Petty would have done. Tom Petty would have never had, like, a farewell tour. He would have just gone out there, gave it all he had, and then hang it up. He wouldn't making the announcement of it is crazy to me.
Yeah, but I guess it's like a way to sell shit.
Oh, yeah, that's the whole idea. But it's like, dude, do you really think Paul Simon needs money? Or Elton John, right? Elton John did the, I'm going to have a farewell epic tour that lasts like 3 years or something like that.
Yeah, but the thing with these guys, Paul Simon and Elton John, they tour constantly, whereas somebody like Tom Waits or Michael Jackson rarely toured. And so to have a farewell tour being like, yeah, this is the last shit. because Tom Waits tours like what, every 10 years, and Michael Jackson toured like once every 10 years, well, and not even in the States.
Good. So,
well, I mean, like, not that you like these people, but I mean,
one of those people I like.
Well, of course, but I mean, I'm saying it would make sense for them to have a farewell tour, not necessarily Simon and John.
So maybe Michael Jackson would do that, but I guarantee you, Tom Waits would never say, I'm having a farewell tour.
Oh, no. He would have an awesome, badass name for it, like Pescajumba.
And I think that's the thing. Like, a person like that, someone that's really into the artistic side of it and the creative, like, outlet that you get from it, and, like, that feeling from just playing a really good show, it's like anything else. Like, if you have a great day at work, you just kind of feel better. Like, you're kind of instantly uplifted, right?
Right, right, right.
So, but the real deal kind of musicians, and not to say that Paul Simon isn't a real deal musician. He is. He's a great guitar player, incredible songwriter, but there's a different league of, you know, people like that where they just go out and do it. They don't need to say, I'm having a farewell tour to sell tickets. They could care less if there's 5,000 people, 50,000 people. Those people will play exactly the same. They'll give it all they have, whether there's anyone there or not.
Right.
Because they're in it for a different reason. They're not in it because to sell tickets.
No, not.
They're in it for that.
For the, yeah.
Like, you look out in the crowd and you're like, man, these people are fucking into it. Like, I don't know if you...
But I don't think anybody's, like, into it with Paul Simon.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So you're going to take something that's even more kind of boring and bland live, and then bog it down even further by going, well, this is the last one.
And
just going to, like Eeyore, right? We're just going to mosey through it.
And nobody's going for those songs. They're going for, like, Call Me Out or Bridge Over Troubled Water.
There's no way he'll tour his farewell tour and play... He might play three or four songs off of that album, but if you do a farewell tour, you instantly back yourself into
hits.
A corner of hits. Yeah. It's like, you know, I don't know, man. The farewell thing, the farewell tour to me is kind of a fucking, not a cop-out, but it's just, I don't know. I would never do that. I would, if like I was ever a successful musician,
yeah,
I would never personally do that.
It's so
weird to me.
Well, sometimes you look at it from a business standpoint, and probably it wasn't Paul Simon's idea. However, his managers and agents and everybody were like, you bill as a farewell tour, you'll sell more tickets because you just toured 2 years ago and you can sell merch that says the farewell tour, whatever. And he's like, fuck it. Yeah, sure.
So on that though, but how do his lawyers and agents get paid?
Through him.
So that's what I'm saying though. If you, someone that's going to announce a farewell tour has already fucked up somewhere along the way where they have to do it because it's not up to them.
Yeah.
They're not an artist anymore. They're a fucking, like, entity or, like, a, you know, they're like a pawn, right?
Yeah.
Someone just gets to fucking put them into play and decide when they can take them out of play. So that's, I don't know. It's a weird scenario.
But still.
Catch 22.
Yeah, catch 22. I mean, catch 22.
Because you do want to make, you know, money, and you don't want to, you know, play shows and have it cost you money, obviously, but...
But he doesn't have, like, electric light orchestra lights. It's just him on a guitar,
man,
basically.
I'll tell you what, I'm really looking forward to that show in, like, a month.
Yeah, we're going.
Yeah, and Dawes is opening, which is, like, they're playing the store, too. So, anyone, good records, I think it's August 18th, the Monday.
Is it August 18th or August 13th?
One of the two. It's a Monday.
It's 13th.
But Dawes, yeah, they'll be playing an in-store at the store.
Heck so yes.
One,
at Good Records
two,
on Lower Greenville.
I think it's 2 in the afternoon.
Sweet. In the Blue Light, new album by Paul Simon, re-release songs on a new album, comes out September 7th, in time for your September 11th parties.
Don't run. Walk and get it.
True.
No, don't panic, people.
Don't panic. There is a new trailer, the full new length trailer for Bohemian Rhapsody, the Freddie Mercury biopic.
That's going to be really good.
Yeah, with Rami Malek from Mr. Robot as Freddie Mercury. This trailer is so good. The teaser trailer was so good. This is going to be fucking badass. The movie, you know, is going to follow Freddie Mercury and Queen from when they got together to their big London Wembley Arena for the Live Aid 1985 comes out November 2nd, time for Thanksgiving. This trailer, I mean, this movie looks badass because, I mean, Freddie Mercury might be the greatest frontman ever. I mean, I think he overshadows Mick Jagger and...
Oh, hands. Freddie Mercury is in a league of his own where he's almost like a Leon Russell type person.
Yeah,
a master piano player.
Yeah. And then, yes, he is.
We've all seen the meme of, like, the songwriters that wrote a Beyonce song, and then you see the lyrics to Bohemian Rhapsody, and it just says Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Like, one person wrote this epic Mozart-type masterpiece, and then 13 other people wrote Girls Run the World, or whatever the fuck.
Exactly. And you look at that, and it's the same goes for movies, too. Like, you see one of the biggest action movies, they're written by usually at least 5 to 10 people, whereas it's not like an awesome indie film or anything by Kubrick. One writer only.
Yeah. Well, Queen is one of my favorite bands ever, and they kind of get overlooked in a rock and roll standpoint, where they were a really, really heavy band and were a huge influence on Metallica, which we will talk about later. But Queen is... The first three Queen albums are fantastic, but this movie does look really good. And I know that, you know, Brian May and I think John Deacon are both involved with, like, the final product of it. Like, they basically are kind of like a filter, from what I've read, of, like, we like this... We don't like that. Because they've been trying to make this movie for like 10 years now. Like, I remember that Sacha Baron Cohen,
you know, Borat.
Yeah, was cast as Freddy. And when I heard that, I was like, dude, he's going to nail that.
Yeah.
Because if he did it the right way, like if he didn't go into it to troll it and you know, be the...
And he wouldn't do that for that.
He totally wouldn't. Because Queen is a... Man, that band, everyone... Other than the obvious, like, if someone's going to say anything bad about Queen, it's usually some stupid gay crack joke.
Yeah.
Which is just bad taste. But their music is, like, such...
It's on a different level. And, like, Jacob put it perfectly. Like, I think certain movies or albums deserve their own special Grammy because they're just above everything else. And I think Queen is one of those bands that, like, deserves... every award every year just for being them because they are so good.
Oh my god.
In that time frame.
They're one of my favorite bands to like listen to with headphones on. Like you think Bohemian Rhapsody, we'll just go with that one because everyone knows it, right?
Right.
You hear that in your car and you're like, wow, I mean it's Wayne's World, dude. It makes you, anyone who hears that in a car and it gets to that part towards the end, the rocking part, everyone's head just starts,
head banging,
It doesn't matter who you are. But you put headphones on and listen to that thing from the beginning, right? The first 5 minutes of it. And it's like, you know, if you could have a soundtrack to like getting shot into outer space, like cue that song up.
Yeah.
And just look straight down. Because it is the most epic masterpiece, well-written piece of music. Like that kind of thing could rival like a, you know, a Beethoven like piece. Like
no, it absolutely is. And it's like it's an operatic masterpiece with modern day rock at the time.
And then the lyrics. Like you just you know, we're just talking about the music. Then you factor in Freddie's vocals.
Yeah.
What he's saying.
Yes.
And the way he's
doing
singing.
It. Yeah.
It's like, holy shit, these guys are great band. They're a band where I wish I could go back in time. Like Jimi Hendrix, I would go back in time to see. Thin Lizzy and Queen, like
Queen,
I saw them live when they got with Paul Rodgers from Bad Company and Free.
Okay,
they did an album together, and it's horrible. No one should ever try to do Freddie Mercury. I've seen Queen with Adam Lambert too,
and
really good. He does a great job at it, and he doesn't try to sing all the notes either.
Okay,
if you try to go out there and go, hey, I'm going to do these Freddie Mercury songs, and I'm going to sing them, you're only going to fail.
Yeah.
Like, there's no possible... Like, Pavarotti couldn't do it. You know, like, it doesn't matter if you have the range, you know all the notes, you know the songs. There's a feel to it, and Freddie had that swagger and, like... Man, he had just an incredible talent. Like,
yeah. His stage presence was crazy.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I love Guns N' Roses, and Axl Rose, you know, you put up there with great frontmen, but as far as frontman that would rival Freddie Mercury.
Nobody.
Yeah, Mick Jagger, great. Doesn't come close to touching
Yeah.
The whole persona and, like, enigmatic, like, feel of Freddie Mercury. Like,
I agree.
Like, dude, guy might like dudes, but it's like you also don't want to leave your girlfriend around him either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, swat, that guy, put him at a piano, dude. Like, chicks are going to, they would cream themselves. Just Freddie Mercury in a lounge playing piano, right? Or like the Belmont Hotel, right? Imagine seeing that.
You don't know what, yeah, what would you,
what
do?
Would you,
yeah,
do? What would you fucking do? Like,
pass
would,
out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it would, I think he would just freeze. It would be one of those moments where, like,
this is happening.
Yeah, just time just kind of stops, right?
Yeah.
It'd be like if you saw it, you saw a fucking alien or something. It wouldn't speed up. Like, time wouldn't fly by.
Yeah.
It'd be like, wow, what is going on right now? Like, it's wild.
It is wild. I would also like to bring up that the actor Joseph Mazzallo will be playing John Deacon in the movie. Joseph Mazzallo is the young boy from Jurassic Park, the original movie.
Yeah. He's a... He didn't really... I can't think of anything he's done in a long time.
He did the HBO's Pacific. He was in The Social Network.
And okay, maybe something fan, we got a fan over here, I see.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
All right.
Joseph Mazzallo. So I'm curious to see this, but yes. Bohemian Rhapsody, November 2nd. Check
How
out the trailers.
How long have they been working on this movie?
A long freaking time.
Ten years would probably be a good guess, I would think.
Yeah, because the Sacha Baron Cohen news probably came out... Well, they were probably in production, but they announced it was years ago. And then there was just so many problems with the movie.
Now, I wonder how much money they've spent on it.
Let me see if I can check that out for you.
Because that would be... They'd have to sell a lot of fucking tickets to probably break even on this at this point. It's like Chinese Democracy, right? Remember that Guns N' Roses album that took like 12 years
yes.
to make? I remember I went out and got that. And my girlfriend at the time laughed at me. She's like, you're going to Best Buy at 7 in the morning to buy, stand in line to buy a Guns N' Roses album. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, I am. I couldn't tell. I thought I got the wrong CD when I put it in the car when I got in. I was like, oh, they put the wrong CD in here. It was the worst thing I'd ever heard. I was like, we waited 12 years for this? I hope that's not the case with this Queen movie. I don't think it could possibly be.
No. So Bohemian Rhapsody was announced in 2010. And originally it was Sacha Baron Cohen.
Okay.
So... and then shit happened, and now,
what did happen? Why did that not ever, like, get seen through?
Let's see here. I think it just was one of those things where the studio or the producers had a different, I guess the band wanted to take a more family-friendly approach to the film where...
Sell more tickets.
Sacha Baron Cohen wanted to make a more adult-oriented film.
You know what? That's what... I think they should have, like, almost made it to where, like, you know, like, Blow, right?
Yeah.
That movie has that really kind of... You know it's going to end horribly, right?
Right, yeah.
And it has that really fun... honest vibe to it where it's like, yeah, we're doing coke and getting pussy and all these crazy things are happening, right? Like, they should, I think they need to go into detail of, like, what was going
well,
on.
Well, you can't leave a lot of that stuff out.
Yeah, that's
part of it. Yeah, can't make it.
It's part of the whole story where it's like, it's such a heartbreaking, you know, it's like a, it's a big kind of epic, like, almost failure, but they were so successful, but it's just unfortunate that, you know, he died.
No, yeah, well...
Because they were, like, they were only going to continue to get good. And granted, you know, they didn't make some of my favorite albums, like, later on.
Yeah.
But I like all of them, you know, with Freddie. Because it's just such a... The talent of that guy is just... I don't even know how anyone could even begin to describe it.
No,
it would take, like, an Albert Einstein brain to, to, like, give you the breakdown of a Freddie Mercury type... brain.
Yeah, it's
and like skill
what
level.
He did. Yeah,
unbelievable.
It's good stuff.
Everyone in that band, dude. Brian May is a very underrated guitar player.
They're all great. I mean, I wish, you know, you wish Freddie Mercury wouldn't die because you know he would still be going today.
It's kind of though. It almost makes it though like it's like a bittersweet moment because you're like then you're like it makes those songs even that much more like
right
epic and like
and he went out on a high note like he
well,
didn't
I wouldn't say that.
Well, I mean, like, he had, I mean, I don't think Freddie Mercury ever made a terrible piece of music.
He made a solo album, I can't remember the name of it, but it's like, and it's, you know, he's on the front of it with sunglasses and like a wife beater, like a white wife beater. And I don't remember it being like incredible. And I don't, it's very 80s sounding, you know, like it sounds very kind of.
So Mr. Bad Guy or Barcelona?
That's it. Is Mr. Bad Guy. What that, the cover look like?
Yeah, just him with glasses. Okay, and yeah. Going, yes.
And so that, not, but that's not Queen.
No, that's not Queen.
Like, so Freddie in Queen is different than Freddie.
It's Freddie Mercury, Fred Mandel, Kurt Kress, and Joe Burt. And, I mean, it did well. It's got good reviews, but
well, yeah,
it's not Queen.
Of course
Queen,
it is.
Though.
I mean, by default, he's going to sell a shit ton of albums. Just
right.
Because of that fan, his, there's a certain demographic of his fan base that is like, it's like Madonna, right?
Yeah.
Anytime Madonna puts out new music.
People are going to go to it because they know her.
Specifically, the, like, the gay community, right? Like, by
yeah.
default, like, bam, you just sold 10 million albums.
Right.
Because they've been very vocal up front about, like, hey, this is what's going on. Although, you know, people didn't know that he was dying. It was kind of obvious that it's like, well, if you didn't know that Freddie Mercury was gay by, like, looking at him, or, like, kind of the way he performed, he was very, you know, majestic and, like, you just kind of could tell, you know what I mean? But it's not a big deal at all.
Yeah.
Like, and anyone that, I've never heard of, you know, musicians, metal guys even, you know, where you would think that that sort of like opinion would have something to affect on it. Like, oh, I don't like him because he's gay, where some people might think that in the certain community. Any musician that you ever ask about Freddie Mercury is like, it's always the same answer. Like, that's never an issue.
Yeah, it's always, yeah.
It's music. It's strictly music, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, that guy was incredible. Like, absolutely incredible.
He was. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, where's the fucking time machine, man?
Yeah, that's
like,
what
I want to go back and see.
That live, yes.
Yeah, and like, imagine seeing them at like Wembley, right?
Jesus
like
Christ,
a
that'd
home,
be crazy
a
cool.
Hometown
yeah,
show correct. With fucking
hundreds
Queen,
of thousands,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, just
on that giant stage, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be
super
like.
Super cool.
That'd be like seeing like Tim McGraw at like Cowboys Stadium. This sheer
pandemonium.
Yeah, they're going goo goo gaga out here.
Oh, that's good. All right. Our last bit of news. It's an interesting bit of news, a weird bit of news. It's about David Bowie. There is an exhibit that is going around to multiple cities called David Bowie Is. That's the title of the exhibit. And it's launching as a virtual reality experience, and it will allow users to try on David Bowie's costumes, among other unique interactions. The exhibition about David Bowie's music, art, and creative journey is told through his personal archives, and it's simply titled David Bowie Is. And it's going to be in 12 international cities over 6 years. But I guess there's a series of audio-visual spaces that explore 3D scans of Bowie's memorabilia, and you'll be able to step into his costumes and his memorabilia and actually do this in a VR type of setting, which is very interesting. If this works well, you can see it doing with, like, Michael Jackson or Freddie Mercury. What do you think about this?
I think that's a horrible, horrible idea. Like, I don't... Unless Bowie somehow, before he died, was like, hey, yeah, I'm cool with that. Like, that's a good idea. That, I don't know. That kind of stuff weirds me out. I'm not a... I would have no interest in doing something like that. It's weird. Like, if you could go... Oh, you can go to this Jimi Hendrix museum and put these goggles on, and then you get to, like, play at Woodstock. Like, you're... There's, like, a fake crowd in front of you. Like,
I mean, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not... I don't know. Like, that's, like, virtual reality weirds me out, man. Like, I don't... I'm not into it.
Have you done it before?
Yeah, I've done it. It makes me feel really weird and, like, uncomfortable every time I do it.
So, would you rather...
Like, the Oculus thing, and then there's that... I remember there, my buddy had this... It was, like, a box that you put your iPhone in, and it had, like, a...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
and you
yeah.
just slid your phone into it, and it sticks to your face, and it was like a milk carton was on your face, right?
Yeah, so I have one of those. The studio sent me one for in the last Transformers movie, and I put my phone in, and you could literally go in, a, like, a 360 you know, ways of looking up or down, and you can, like, see the entire scene around you.
You know what those are? Those are, like, the Tide Pods for adults. the virtual reality glasses, that's what those... I'm not a fan of them, man. Like, I feel that... That's, like, the infiltration to your brain, right? Like, so the camera on your phone where people are like, oh, that thing's always watching you and blah, blah, blah. If you're strapping this thing to your head and it's creating this, like, fake world for you... Like, it's, I don't know, man, like, it could be penetrating your brain through, like, some weird wavelengths that are around the elastic that you're putting on your head or something. Like, I don't trust things like that. I'm not into them. I never have, like, video games, right? Like, I don't like playing new video games.
Okay.
Like, analog, like, NES games, things that, like, don't work and stuff. Like, oh, it's going to break halfway through. It'll overheat and start flashing. Like, that's fun. Not, like...
It is. I want my video games to not work.
Well, no, I mean, okay, they work. Like, sometimes they work.
No, like, yeah, it's like
you need
analog
alcohol and Q-tips.
Yes.
And you gotta fucking blow on it and hold it sideways and hit the reset button 3 times. Stuff like that. Like,
it was much simpler back then, for sure.
Well, do you think you would go to that? You would go to that art exhibit?
So I would like to go to an art exhibit with David Bowie and, like, see all this cool shit, but putting on the VR and, like, becoming him, probably not. Just yet.
Okay, but in theory, though, right? Like, do they really need the museum? Couldn't they just sell it as an app? Like, why do you need to travel to a fake place to go to a fake place? You have to go. They're going to tour for what, 3 years? It says
6 years.
Like, why do you have to travel to a place to go to somewhere that you're not really going to?
So my understanding is that, yes, they technically could download an app and they can even make you pay for it. However, this seems like a bigger deal. Like, they actually might, like, have, like, a whole room or room set up with his memorabilia.
They probably have some, like, of it in the flesh.
Yeah, something like that. But, again, I think most people with David Bowie, yeah, they want to kind of come maybe see his outfits or, like, see, like, a labyrinth type of thing, you know. But I mean, that would be cool to be, like, Jareth from Labyrinth and David Bowie with all, like, the little puppets.
What if you could just be the bulge?
Yeah, the cod piece.
Like, someone should make that in, like, a video game, like a Mortal Kombat type game. They should make Bowie's crotch one of the players.
Yes.
Like, you could battle Leatherface as
in his gray tights.
Yeah.
Did you know, do you remember when Jim Henson was doing Labyrinth, who originally they wanted besides Bowie for that role of Jareth?
Freddie Mercury.
No, there was two people on the docket, and I guess they both turned them down, I think.
David Duke and Daniel Carver.
Yes. No, it would have Sting and Michael Jackson.
Oh, God.
Two different movies that would have been. Luckily, they went with Bowie because he has that Labyrinth, mysterious, weird...
He was the... I mean, no...
He was the Goblin King.
Yeah, like, Michael Jackson. God, come on.
I mean, his pilot time. It was like the 80s. It was the height. So I can see that happening.
There would have just been nothing there, right? Like, there would... If Michael Jackson would have played it, there would have just been like a... Like... Just a flat area.
It would have been a different movie, different songs, and different costumes.
Yeah, he's dancing his way through the labyrinth.
Even
moonwalking.
Any one of them. But I'm glad. I mean, you're glad.
Sting would have just been jerking off all over the place, right? Like, you know what I mean? Remember he did that, like, creepy interview with, like, CNN that one time, and he's like, "I'm into tantra."
Tantra.
Yeah, he's like, "Ooh, what's that?" Like, and it, like, candles, like, lit up all this.
Yeah.
It's fucking really weird, man. Like, I don't know. They're all creepy. I mean, Labyrinth is a real creepy movie if you think about it.
No, it really was.
He steals a baby.
Yes, he does.
Like, that's why Michael Jackson couldn't do it.
It was too real.
Too real. Like, okay, no, it's not that, it's not you, Mike. It's the situation.
It's a true story.
Yeah, it is a true story.
So, yeah, David Bowie, I actually do not know...
What was that really bad joke that was like, how do you know it's bedtime at Neverland Ranch?
What?
When the big hand touches the little hand?
Ooh, too soon.
Man, whatever. Like, He's free. That's it.
He's free.
Such an easy target because I'm just not a fan. I've never got the appeal of Michael Jackson.
I love him. We're going to talk about Michael Jackson.
No, we're not.
Oh, yes, we are.
Oh, no, we've done enough already.
So David Bowie is... There will be 60 custom-made performance costumes at the exhibit. Tons of music videos, television clips, filmed roles. Just tons of stuff if you are looking for that. But it looks like the Brooklyn Museum.
I bet that they don't make it 3 years because Bowie is kind of one of those people where it's like Prince, right? Everyone is a Prince fan, but they only know Purple Rain. They couldn't tell you, like,
oh my God,
another, like, think about it, though, right? Like, anyone that was like, oh, yeah, I like Prince, they only know Purple Rain. Like, what?
Which is crazy to me.
What do most people know about Bowie? How does everyone know Bowie?
I mean, Ziggy Stardust, is that what
he has numerous characters,
yeah,
right?
Right.
But most people only know, right, Ziggy Stardust. So it's like, are you really getting the fans?
As long as they're making
like,
money.
I don't think fans would be into that. I could be wrong, but it's like they toured like Dio, right? The singer, the metal,
yes,
great vocalist, right? Died years ago, and now he has a band. A band goes out, they tour as Dio,
right,
with a hologram. So they project a hologram onto the stage, and it moves around. So like this band's up there playing, and they're playing live, but they're playing to pre-recorded vocals,
right?
And there's a fake Dio. And to me, like, this Bowie thing is, like, the same... It's, like, the same kind of thing. It's, like, what... They're not going to... If Bowie was alive, right, he would sell out, what, like, American Airlines Center? You don't think he would sell out, you know, where the Cowboys play? Maybe.
If he played 3 shows out of the year and one of them was AT&T, yes, he'd sell it out.
Yeah,
but if he goes on a huge tour... He's only going to sell 20,000 tickets. Maybe he'll do two shows.
Whatever, yeah. Only 20,000 tickets.
Well, right? As opposed to 102,000, it's like a fifth of it.
So if they had a David Bowie hologram and they toured that, how many tickets do you think they would sell?
After his death?
If they toured as David Bowie and it was a hologram of him.
They would sell out AT&T.
Oh, as David Bowie as a hologram.
Yeah, they'd sell out AT&T.
I think maybe 500 people would go to that. Who would want to go see... A band playing with essentially not a frontman there, right? So what if the projector breaks and you can't see the Bowie hologram on stage? People don't want to see a hologram of a performer.
I agree, but some people are crazy.
Well, maybe. I mean, fuck. Wouldn't they have Tupac, right?
Yeah, they did Tupac one.
But it was at Coachella.
Yes.
So there was already
people
there.
Yeah.
But I'd like to... They should try that before they...
Do this?
That art thing.
All right.
Because I think you would be totally wrong. I just don't think people would be into that. But who knows, man? Like, how can we find out? I guess we'll have to wait.
We'll have to wait.
We could go to it.
Well, yeah, let's try... Let's take a trip to the Brooklyn Museum and go to it. And then do a show from there. That would be awesome.
From the Bowie Museum with the fake goggles on?
Yes. We'll get Jacob in those goggles and see what happens.
I'll turn into Aladdin Sane. Right?
It's a great, great album.
Yeah, Hunky Dory, dude. Like, what's going on that cover? That's one of the weirdest album covers ever.
It is. I have that.
Yes. I mean, what is it? Like, who... It's him, but it's like, what the fuck's going on?
Who knows?
He knew.
Well, he knew everything. And he was married to an amazing woman, Iman.
Yep. I used to like think that like she was like a eunuch. Like I remember that was like a rumor I'd heard at one point. Like she didn't have like any sort of like a genitalia.
Yeah.
Right? Like I kind of believed it for a long time because I was like, well, it makes sense because he's kind of so androgynous, you know, like
right.
It would that kind of if it was some sort of weird pairing like that, like it would kind of make sense that it would because he is so unique, you know, like. Again, same kind of realm of like a Freddie Mercury type performer and like songwriter, just out of this world.
Yeah, her real name is Zara Mohammed. She was born in Somalia. However, if I ever had the chance to interview her, I would love to bring up going back to Michael Jackson.
Oh no.
Iman was in, she was an actress too, but she was also in the Michael Jackson music video of Remember the Time from the Dangerous album. And she was the queen to Eddie Murphy's King. So you know, you'd got to think that Bowie and Michael Jackson and Eddie Murphy hung out at some point, and you have to think, like, what happened there? Did they ever, like, sit in a room and just, like, write something? Did they do any music together?
Man, I don't think Bowie would have wanted to write with those clowns. I mean, like... I mean, Bowie would be like, yeah, you got something done where I can just get it over with.
What?
I don't know, man. I mean, was David Bowie a fan of Michael Jackson? Like, do you ever hear anything about either of them talking about each other?
I would imagine they did.
I mean, I've never heard. I'm just saying. I mean, I don't see Bowie as being like a Michael Jackson fan.
I mean, why? How would nobody be a Michael Jackson fan?
I'm not a Michael Jackson fan.
Which is weird.
It's not weird. Saying you don't like the Beatles is weird.
So Michael Jackson, David Bowie.
Like, they probably sang on We Are the World or something. Like, some sort of big compilation song of artists trying to raise money for some starving country that's eating itself.
I don't know. We'll look into that. But let's move on to our one-hit wonder. Last week, well, first off, we do a segment where we talk about one-hit wonders. And
there's no formula to this.
There's
show,
no formula, man. But we're doing this. We did our news. We're going to go on to one-hit wonders. Last week, we did Lollipop. This week, we're bringing it all the way to 1991,
oh, yeah.
Specifically 1992.
Bringing it to 91, specifically 92. What?
Well, so this band formed in 91, but it wasn't until 1992 where their one hit came out.
They had a one hit in 1 year? Like, yeah. It took them 1 year to do the one hit wonder.
Yes.
That's incredible. What a feat.
In 1992, I was 11 years old, and I totally remember this. As I imagine a lot of you will remember this. We were talking about James Christopher Kelly and Christopher Smith forming the hip-hop rap duo Crisscross,
a.k.a. Backpants.
Backpants. From their album Totally Crossed Out, from Roughhouse Records, their hit single Jump, which topped the Billboard Hot 100 for 8 weeks, becoming the first rap song to have achieved so long a run at the top.
That's a rap song. That couldn't sound more street.
So, Crisscross, you remember the two little kids with the jerseys on?
Daddy Mac will make ya.
Jump, jump.
Great
Mac Dad will make ya.
I remember that music video.
Their names were Mac Daddy and Daddy Mac.
Yeah, they were like the hype guys.
And their thing was that they wore their clothes backwards.
I think just their pants, though.
No, I mean, on the album, their jerseys are on the other side,
yeah,
too.
That's right. The names were on the front.
Yeah, so, and their pants were behind them.
Yeah. I used to do that. Did you ever used to wear your pants backwards? My dad, he would laugh.
Fuck yes, I did. That was the jam.
Well, then it's like, go to the bathroom in that.
Well, yeah.
It's like, oh, wait a minute. I gotta
sit down.
Not practical.
And I think they also coined, I want to say that they also coined the fad in the 90s of wearing overalls, however, wearing one strap out.
Yeah.
One strap up.
They probably crossed them, right? Yeah. Crisscross, right? Crossed the strap.
I feel like that would have given you, like, the biggest, like, man camel toe
you
ever.
Every time I think of Crisscross, I think of those, like, it was a Bugs Bunny and Tasmanian Devil shirts. Remember when you saw those and they were wearing, like, the oversized clothes and
yeah.
a backwards hat on? People always had those underneath, like, overalls they were wearing, right? And like you said, they would leave the one unbuckled, but they were, like, white overalls, right?
Yeah, yeah.
People were wearing, like, painter's overalls as, like, fashion, right?
Right.
It's like, what the... And they were backwards.
Yeah.
Like, backwards overalls.
It's so... What we went through. Like, that was the jam.
But man, a lot of bad things happened in the 90s.
Yes.
Like, this song is one of them. Although...
Well, we like this song.
Well, it's like... It's got that nostalgia thing to it, but like I'm cool with not ever hearing it again.
Really? No, I have this album on vinyl.
I'm sure you do.
Crisscross.
What I'm saying is, like, I wouldn't need to hear the whole thing. Like, first verse, chorus, I'm good.
Good.
Somebody
try to rhyme, but they can't rhyme like this. Go, go.
The thing. How old were they when that song came out?
Okay,
like,
so
12 years old.
So I'll bring it down. They were about 11 or 12 years old,
okay.
Same age as I, when they first were discovered in an Atlanta shopping mall in 1991.
They're from Atlanta.
By a 19-year-old named Jermaine Dupri.
Oh, Jermaine Dupri. There you go, dude.
So he discovered them at the mall, and then a year later, which way they were both 13 or 14, they released Totally Crossed Out and Jump.
Who look up who wrote the song. Look who wrote up Jump. I bet it's got to be Jermaine Dupri.
Jermaine Dupri. Songwriters, Jermaine Dupri, yeah. Barry Gordy.
Yeah, Barry Gordy.
Freddie Perren, Alfonso Mazzell.
They had some money behind these kids, dude, because I remember, like, this thing was huge because white people were getting into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I actually think that this was a product that was marketed strictly to white, like, suburbanites.
So,
you know what I mean?
You know, I totally get it because there was no cursing in it. It was just like
it was
kids.
Fun. It was family,
yeah.
fun.
It
was a
family it was a gangsta
rap song.
Yeah. It by little kids.
Boy, it was
yeah.
Little, dude, it was a fucking boy band. Call it what it is, dude. They're fucking.
Exactly.
It's Pink Floyd, Welcome to the Machine, right? it's Criss Cross in human form.
So they topped the charts in Switzerland and Australia as well as the United States.
You know what? They were like a cultural phenomenon, kind of like the Beatles, right?
Yeah, they were like icons. People were dressing like them. People were acting like them.
People saw that video and were like, hey, I could wear my pants backwards too, right?
Yeah.
People were tripping everywhere, you know, trying to walk in your ass is on your crotch. Like, that ain't right.
No.
Walking around.
I agree.
Like, that's crazy. People were out of control, man. What year was that? 1992?
1992. They sold...
Let me guess. Or is it singles or like whole albums?
The whole albums.
Okay. I bet they sold 10 million.
No. So, well, I don't know. I haven't seen how much they have sold altogether. But just in 1992, from the time February 6th, through December 31st of 1992, they sold 2,079,000 copies.
Damn, less than,
physical copies.
Less than a year.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
That's just in America or all over the internationally?
Just in the United States.
Oh, my God. And so, like you said, they went, what, number one in Switzerland?
And in Australia.
So that's a million, I get easily right there, each other country. I bet you could factor in 500,000 and up. Easy.
Yeah. Yep. It was the fastest selling single in 15 years and stayed on the Billboard Hot 100 for 8 weeks.
Unbelievable. I guess that's a testament to all the bad music that was made in the 80s. Right? Like, if it took 15 years.
It's so crazy.
Unbelievable song. Do you remember the music video?
Yes, I do. It was damn good. The song actually samples the Jackson 5's I Want You Back, the Ohio Players' Funky Worm, and the Honey Drippers' Impeach the President.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's nothing original about that. It's a package, you know what I mean? Like, that's a product. But I also feel that they had another song, though, that actually got pretty big.
Warm It Up, Chris. I'm about to. Chris. That's what I was going
to
do.
Look up that one. I bet that's... I don't think Criss Cross is actually a one-hit wonder. I think they...
No, that was their one.
No.
That was their one. Hold on. Before I go to that, the song has been used on television in both commercials and programs such as Law & Order. And
it.
Philadelphia Cream Cheese. So weird.
The fucking commercial?
Jump. When Boys in the Hood.
For sour cream, you said?
Cream cheese.
Whatever.
This movie, Jesus Christ, yeah. This movie, in Ireland it was number one, in New Zealand it was number one. Oh,
God, maybe I don't want to move to New Zealand. Well, that was 1992, I'm sure they've
done.
What are they listening? They're probably listening to, like, Scott Stapp or something. Solo bootleg Scott Stapp shows.
Some Scott Stapp shows.
Scott Stapp live from the parking lot.
So Warm It Up, Chris was on that same album, Totally Crossed Out.
Warm It Up, Chris, I'm about.
And it reached... It came, that single that really chart-topping hit was in June, not February of 92. And it reached number 13 on the Billboard Hot 100, not number one.
Okay, there you go. Not a one-hit wonder then. Because if you... You know how hard it is to, like, launch a song into, like, the top 100?
Probably.
I mean, it's tough. Because you got to think, like, there's a ton of bands out there, right?
Yeah.
And they talk about everything. So to make it onto a chart like that, you either...
And it was written by Jermaine Dupri, too.
Dude, Jermaine Dupri was, like, the mastermind behind it. It's almost like child exploitation a little bit.
Oh, they also did the song on the same album, I Missed the Bus. I forgot that song.
I don't know if I remember that one.
I missed the bus. So,
What did that one go to?
I missed the bus.
See, not that was a bad one-hit wonder.
It was their third single from their debut album, however, number 63 on the Billboard Hot 100.
Okay, that dude, I'm telling you, to get into the top 100 is just a feat in itself. It really is. That's an accomplishment. I mean, and then to get to number one is like, you got to have some huge backers behind you, you know, some fucking marketing. Because does that song stand up now? Is that like fucking listening to like Blowing in the Wind?
No.
Right? Like, come on. Like, I'm serious. Like, just think about it.
I like listening to like Blowing in the
it's
Wind.
It's not even
Jesus
close.
Christ.
It's like we were saying earlier, that fucking Beyonce song, and then you compare it to like any number of Queen songs, right? One person wrote this, 12 people wrote this. It's fucking nuts.
Now I'm going to bring this up to you. We're going to go back to Michael Jackson. Mm-mm. Chris Cross landed a spot on Michael Jackson's 1992 European Dangerous Tour, and they made a cameo appearance in the music video for the Dangerous Jam, which was the basketball song where he taught Michael Jordan how to moonwalk, but Chris Cross was actually in that as well. Oh, my God.
You're a new fan. You're a born-again fan. Right?
I am. Additionally, they made appearances in the music videos for Run DMC and TLC as well.
Well, I bet they were on, like, Family Matters.
No, they were on In Living Color and A Different World.
Oh, man, I love it. Dude, In Living Color, you remember that Men's on Vacation?
Men's on Vacation.
We need to talk about that.
Man, we will. Men on Films.
Oh, yeah.
Men's on Vacation.
Men's on Vacation.
We're off the rails. Let's bring it back to Chris Cross, though. May 29th episode of In Living Color, if you want to look up that episode.
Is J-Lo on that one?
Maybe.
That huge ass.
Also, a video game starring Chris Cross.
Oh, what?
Was released on the Sega CD system in 1992.
Sega CD.
It was called Chris Cross Make My Video. It consisted of the players editing together the group's music videos for a few of their hit songs.
Oh, they should have made it where it was like a Double Dragon type game, right? Where it was.
Oh,
like,
my God. Just, how amazing would that be?
You just go. You walk right the whole time.
Right.
And like battle like a beat 'em up, you know, classic beat 'em up game. Fucking Battletoads, right? They really dropped the ball on that.
So, interestingly enough, after their 1992 album totally crossed out, in 1993 they came out with a second album called Da Bomb, which was certified platinum.
See, I'm telling you, not a one-hit wonder. I told you. They fucking Chris Cross didn't fuck around, dude.
So, they had another album in 1996 called Young, Rich, and Dangerous, and it was certified gold.
I mean, that's 500,000.
Yeah. And then their fourth albums, and then they went on to their independent careers, all that stuff.
Hey, I got to say, I'm looking at this flyer here of that burlesque show you went to on Saturday.
The Bells of Burlesque.
Yeah, Bunny Galore. Man, that's one of the best butts I've ever seen in my life.
There you go.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Bunny Galore.
Me Too movement's probably going to be all over me.
No worries. No, it was great. Chris Cross's last performance was in their hometown at the Fox Theater for So Def's 20th anniversary concert in 2013. The duo has been referenced in songs by Eminem, Dr. Dre, Tupac, and Method Man, just to name a few.
Yeah, but they're not giving them, like, they're bashing them a bit. They're not like, Chris Cross was the shit.
You don't think so?
Hell no. There's no fucking way. I mean, there's only one way to find it out. But I would be thinking they would be like the butt of jokes.
Okay. All right. Who knows? I just know that their album that spawned Jump, which was the one hit, really.
That was their number one.
In the U.S., they went 4 times platinum. In Canada, they went 3 times platinum. In Australia, they went gold.
Yeah, that's 10 million. Yeah, that's
crazy.
Insane.
So, get on there. Yeah, get in and listen to Jump again. It's still a fun song. Chris Cross, Make You Jump.
Make you fucking vomit.
All right, on to our main event of our second episode of The Unbalanced Note with Jacob Douglas and myself.
What is your name, anyway?
I'm Brian Kluger. God. I'm with Boomstick Comics. You'll find this podcast on there. You'll find it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Type in the Multimedia Men. You'll find it. So we're going to talk about Metallica, perhaps one of the most mainstream heavy rock, maybe heavy metal bands ever. At least they're like most successful as far as money goes. The band was formed in 1981 in L.A. by drummer Lars Ulrich and vocal guitarist James Hetfield. And then they've been based in San Francisco for mostly the rest of their career. But they have had a very, very rocky relationship with each other and with their fans, as some of you might know. What do you have to say about... Metallica, they really brought heavy metal to the forefront mainstream. Like, I think, to make... because heavy metal's always been there, hard rock. But with Metallica, it really, I think, amped it, to a next level. Where, holy shit, this is awesome. Where's the rest of this?
Yeah, well, dude, so Metallica is, a perfect example of, what money and success will do to a great band. To where, when they started, with Dave Mustaine, right? I think Dave Mustaine had a pretty huge hand in the sound of the first four Metallica albums. He essentially put the wheels into motion. Had it just been, Hetfield, fucking Lars, and even, Cliff was incredible. Cliff Burton.
Right.
But without Dave, I don't think that they would have sounded the way they did early on without him. He was a key component in that early Metallica sound and wrote a lot of the really early great, to me, timeless Metallica songs. All the stuff, before the Black Album, but Kill 'Em All, that first Metallica record, dude. Half of those songs, when you look at it on the credits,
yeah,
Mustaine, written by Mustaine.
Well, they also had a... So how I can compare Metallica is to AC/DC before the Back in Black, the Black Album of AC/DC. Even though AC/DC sounded the same, I think they just got even more popular after the Black Album, even though I think Master of Puppets is one of their best albums.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, dude, Ride the Lightning is ripping. The first four are incredible. And then it's the same thing with Metallica and AC/DC. You're right, because the only thing that really changed is they lost a key member.
Right.
So Cliff Burton, dies in Metallica. Yes. Bon Scott dies in AC/DC. So they instantly probably as a band were we have to somehow amp it up. And they weren't going to do it musically.
Right.
Because in Metallica, you lost the most talented member.
Right.
You lost the guy that had the fucking balls in the band.
Right. And in AC/DC, Bon Scott was kind of the life force.
Freddie Mercury category, right?
Yeah.
Frontman deluxe. You want a rock singer? Yeah. Bam. Yeah. You got all of it.
And he made a song called "You Wanna Be a Rock and Roll Singer."
Dude, he got a song about... We all know what AC/DC song's about. But anyway.
Boners fighting and sex.
So check it out, right? So the first four Metallica albums, right? Thrashy, great, fucking drink beer when your parents are out of town, maybe break something and just have a good time, party music, right?
And this is early 80s. I was 2 years old, so I wasn't listening to them yet.
Yeah, I wasn't born. But when I got into them, the first album I heard from Metallica, I was born in 84. So the first one I heard was the Black Album.
Right.
I didn't really know. I was too young to know anything about them. My parent dad wasn't into Metallica, he metal.
You find out through a friend or radio.
Yeah, peers at school, right? And they were like, man, this is just damn Metallica. And I'm like, okay. Then they had we got the cassette, right? And I remember listening and being like, man, this is a really cool album. It sounded really big. It sounds like a Queen album. There's a lot of production to it. There's songs where you can hear 10 different guitars going on. There's a lot of tracks on each song, and it's this big, epic, build-up kind of masterpiece. There's ballads on it.
Yeah.
That album still sells a shit ton every year. It's one of the highest selling albums of all time, the Black Album.
Oh, yeah.
But that is, from that point forward, they always, to me, stopped being Metallica. Because after that album, they never got it, they have never gotten it right again.
and I think part of that was, like you said, fame and money changed them to be idiots.
So look up how many albums that sold, because this number is going to blow your fucking mind.
But the Black Album.
Imagine having, like, I'll never know that level of success of going, man, we sold 100 million records. We don't ever have to do any. We're wiping our asses with fucking gold bricks and flinging them out the window. You know what I mean? Like, those guys are in, they are very, very well off successfully, you know, successful musicians, which is extremely hard to do as a musician to be that successful.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Black Album was just self-titled Metallica, but known as the Black Album. It was their fifth studio album.
Yeah, fifth album.
And it was released in 1991 by Elektra Records.
Bob Rock, dude, produced that album. He did the Bon Jovi album. So it had that poppy radio. It was made for the radio sound.
No, absolutely. It was also issued to rock radio shortly after. Yes, that is exactly right.
Didn't even need to see the screen, dude. I know I can. I'll go toe to toe about Metallica facts all day with anyone. Bring it.
By June 2018, this album that came out in 1991 have spent 488 weeks on the Billboard album chart.
Yeah, how many has it sold though? That's what I'm saying.
When you see
the number, you're gonna like.
The album was certified 16 times platinum. In 2012, and has sold over 16 million copies just in the U.S. But I'm looking to see how much it has sold in the last, like, 5-6 years.
And I'm telling you, I think overall in the history of that album, because then when you get past the Napster thing, right, of like, and then, you know, that's kind of a weird, we should talk about that, because the Napster thing, in a way, they were kind of in the right, but they just didn't know it at the time, and other people didn't know it at the time. Because now when you look at it, like when you look at like Spotify, right, and you see artists, like if you follow people on Twitter, right, every now and then you'll see one of them post a check from like Spotify, right?
Yeah.
So like you'll see like Dave Grohl, right? He gets a check from Spotify for like $380.
Right.
And you got to think, okay, wait a minute. That's Dave Grohl in the fucking Foo Fighters, and he's getting the $300 check, and I'm this low totem pole artist who gets mailed checks for like $1.82.
Yeah.
Like there could be like a negative in front of it. Like, yeah, you somehow owe money.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? For like a free, something free, right? So
yeah.
Metallica, I've never kind of really faulted them for that. That didn't have anything to do with me not liking them anymore. The music had everything to do with me not liking them. Because when they did the Napster thing, yeah, I fucking used Napster, but
we all did.
Everyone did it, right? Like, there was, like, Kazaa, and there was all these other
LimeWire.
Right? Yeah, but they were right. They were like, if this kind of thing happens, and things are getting given away for free, people are making money off of it by not even participating in the creation of it, right? They're getting paid almost as, like, advertising it and whoring it out to someone else so they can turn a profit when they didn't have anything to do with the original product. You know what I mean? So that's why even like Taylor Swift, right? Like, you for a long time, I don't think her music was like on iTunes or something.
Neither was the Beatles.
Yeah, then that's what I'm saying. Like, they didn't want they wanted to be in charge of their own music, like, which, you know, people faulted them at the time for it, but I think most people, when you look back at that, you kind of have to look at it as like they were kind of right. They saw this wave of shit coming with, you know, streaming services and stuff, where it's like, dude, the artist really doesn't get paid that way, and you're giving it away for free. You know what I mean? It would be like if the Bowie Museum, right, came to town and there was free admission. It would cost them money to do that. Because then what they're paying, they would have to pay to make their own album, or their label would, right? But that money has to get paid back. And there's all kinds of weird ins and outs.
True, but I think with the Napster thing, they were still selling tons of albums. They were still selling out their concerts, their merch.
But it's their music. So the fact that they were, most other bands wouldn't have been that involved. They would have said, let lawyers sort it out. But when you saw them talking about it, when you saw Metallica doing the Napster thing, it was usually them talking about it, or Lars.
No, yeah, Lars was in the courtroom talking about it.
To be that, like, engaged, you know, it's like Gene Simmons level, you know, commitment. That's someone in charge of all the artistic direction and decisions that get made.
Correct.
Right? So there's something to be said for that.
But still, they shouldn't have done that in the way they did that.
I don't know, man. I don't.
Because, I mean, in the end day, you know, even South Park made fun of them for this incident.
South Park made
fun. But it was like, okay, so it's on their private jet. They can't have 10 TVs. They have to have 8 TVs because of Napster.
Why not, though? I mean, like, if that's what they want, it's free country, right?
I mean, that's not like what happened, but I mean,
look, check it out. If people didn't like it, guess what?
But they didn't have to buy the show. They were suing kids, like young kids.
It doesn't matter, man. It doesn't matter.
That's crazy.
That's not crazy to me. Is it crazy that, like, remember that girl? Like, and she got busted downloading all those, like, ABBA songs and, like, Burt Bacharach, and she had to pay a bunch of money in, like, the 90s.
You have to pay $1 per song. They were charged, like, millions.
Okay, so Amazon, right? So if you leave your computer open and an 8-year-old goes on and orders some Star Wars figure on it and it gets charged through your car and it gets sent to your house, are you responsible to pay for it?
If I leave my... Yeah, but
okay,
I would.
Well, there you go.
But then I could say, I didn't order this. I got to go get my money back from the kid. But I'm not going to say,
okay,
kid, you owe me $20 plus a million in damages.
So here's the point, though. The music, they were... What Metallica was trying to do was still hold on to the fact of, like, physical media sales need to be the priority. When you take something that's a product, right, like a record and an album, and you go, hey, you know what? We'll make it a convenience factor, and it won't take up any space. You can just download it on your device here, and you can just stream it, right? You're removing the product from it at that point. You're taking
the product that they made with money. However, you're getting other people into your music to go buy it. Because I guarantee you most of those people did buy
the actual album. But the thing is, like you said, they'd already done the Black Album. They'd already done their biggest album. They didn't even need to fucking make records anymore.
Right.
Right? So, but they chose to, and they chose to go, we don't want to be a part of this because they didn't want to, that's a racket. Like, the Beatles were the same way, right? Holding out on iTunes for a long time. McCartney wanted to be in charge of it. Like, he didn't want some fucking goon in a suit making decisions for, like, yeah, put Beatles songs in car commercials. Like, that's what, those songs weren't for that.
Correct.
Like, fucking Metallica got to be the band where, like, they're making the fucking Mission Impossible soundtrack, which is just horrible, right?
Limp Bizkit did the Mission
Impossible, yeah. Like, those albums, yeah. Right? Like, so all the albums after the Black Album. Load, Reload, fucking S&M, Death Magnetic.
Saint Anger,
dude. Those albums are bad. And when you think of, like... But that's what I'm saying with Mustaine, dude. When you lose Dave Mustaine, when you get kicked out of Metallica for partying too much, you should probably tone it down a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Alcoholica, right? Like, they were known as Alcoholica.
Well, didn't Mustaine go to Megadeth?
He got booted out of Metallica. Then he started Megadeth, right? And Megadeth, to me, when you look at the big picture, it's kind of like comparing the Stones and the Beatles, right?
Right.
The Beatles never made a bad album because they knew when to hang it up. They were like, it's just not working anymore.
Right.
They split up, right? So Metallica started, had Mustaine, booted him out, used half of his songs for the first album, right? Had Kirk Hammett. Then they kind of maintained that sound for the next two albums. Then they do And Justice for All, which is the fourth one.
Right.
And that's when they start to change. You can even hear the sound, right? And
right.
Cliff had died, but you could tell he had a hand in the writing process of those songs, right? There's a huge instrumental song on there. You know, great fucking album, right? The fucking Black Album comes out, right?
Yes, totally, it changes everything.
Totally different, right? Then you have Load, etc., right?
Right.
So on and so on. Megadeth, from their first album to the most current, they've put out more albums than Metallica.
Right.
They've all been better when, in the era of where the Metallica albums were bad, you had Megadeth to go to as the, like, beacon of light of, like, cool, at least someone's still doing fucking good metal.
Right.
Good fucking thrash metal, not radio rock songs with fucking washed up, like, Marianne Faithful doing da 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 da. Remember that song?
No, I do remember that song. But
it's like, that's Metallica?
Well, what was it Load or Reload is when they cut all their hair and become
Load.
Clean cut guys to sell more records.
Well, they did. So, like, you know, the Black Album came out, and then right around that same time, Guns N' Roses had put out the Use Your Illusions album, right? So then they did that tour together, which just was a huge kind of success and also a huge failure because there was riots and, you know, they were egos were clashing. Those were two huge bands, right? But they toured. Metallica was on the road for, I think, on the Black Album for like 5 years. Like they were all over the world.
They did Metallica in 1991, the Black Album, and then it wasn't until 1996, 5 years later, until the next one came out.
That's what I'm saying. They were on the road. They were on the road for a long time. Then they went into like kind of a break, and then when they reemerged, they all cut their hair. They were wearing like those button-up flame shirts. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like
they were like
they were wearing makeup.
Yeah.
Like they looked like someone's like
it almost seems like Kiss.
Like trying. No, it wasn't like Kiss.
With the makeup and the
flames. They were wearing like 80s makeup though. They were wearing like eyeliner and like blush.
Yeah.
Like they didn't have face paint. Like they had like it was to accent their features. Like they, you know what I mean?
Like
they,
Guy Fieri,
dude. Fucking Kirk Hammett had like painted nails.
Yeah,
it was like, what? Wait a minute, what happened to Metallica? And then you hear the music, and you're just like, holy shit, who's making the decisions now?
Right, they are
exactly, and they were all musically they were making really bad decisions because they weren't getting along, right? So like have you ever seen that documentary?
Yes, it was
Some Kind of Monster.
Yeah, Some Kind of Monster, and that was they had to go to rehab before they did Saint Anger.
Yeah, I mean dude, they
all had two big egos. They couldn't be the same
that was
fucking
a
room.
Big heavy party and drinking band, man. Like they were known as Alcoholica.
Yeah.
Like they were I'm telling you, man, like Metallica live I didn't get to see the classic lineup, you know, the early era that I love. But I've seen them a handful of times. And those early songs, they can't really play live. And they're not really a very good live band. Now. But footage of them with Cliff, like Master of Puppets, like when they were on tour with Ozzy and stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, powerhouse live band. Like, phenomenal live band. But you achieve that level of success and start making that amount of money and you go, you know what? We don't even have to write great songs anymore because we already did four albums worth of great classic shit. We can just make whatever we want. So they kind of lost like the artistic edge of probably like creating an album and they've kind of gotten back to like sounding a little more rockin' at least. You know, they're not so like butt rocky fucking radio rock. You know, that kind of stuff. Like, but they're, man, great band, but, you know, to achieve that level of success and have it not change you somehow, I think is kind of impossible. And then you factor in that you lost your most creative person in the band, and Cliff Burton, dying, right? In that bus fucking accident on a fucking, like, drawing cards, right? Like him and Lars were like drawing cards over who got the top bunk or something like
that. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, they were never the same after that. But then again, same with, you know, the AC/DC thing, right? AC/DC was already kind of a big band. Bon Scott dies, they put out the Black Album, bam. Like, they fired out of that fucking cannon and blew the cannon up when they came out of it.
Yeah.
They skyrocketed.
Yeah.
Same with Metallica, man. Like, it was... People already knew them. They were established. And then, bang.
But AC/DC handled it better than... AC/DC knew what was... How to act and not have egos in a band where Metallica just couldn't be together.
That's why I think always think, like, Some Kind of Monster should have won, like, an Oscar for, like, best comedy. Because when you watch it, I watch it from the first time I saw it, I watch it every now and then just because I think it's so funny.
It's funny because you see these grown men and they're acting like petulant four-year-olds where they're legitimately going around to the other members screaming in their face telling them to fuck off.
But what's incredible, though, is they're all rubbing in how successful the other one is to the other one who is the same level of success. They're all multimillionaires, so they're bitching about you know, you're fucking picking at me and blah, blah, blah. And then they're driving off in like Ferraris and.
Yeah, you know, no, yeah,
Lars super is fun. Like, oh, I can only get $6 million, you know, for this painting when, you know, I only paid, you know, $1 million. I should be making more for him.
Yeah, but, it, yeah, you get to see actually it's like, Ulrich. Really?
Dickhead?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You already, don't you have enough money? Why are you collecting art?
Well, he's not collecting art. He was actually making art, and he sold his art
well, some of it,
for $2 or $3 million.
Some of it he also bought. He yes. says in the thing, he's like, I got into it really, you know, someone told me, an investor was like, don't be like all these other rock stars and blow through your money. Buy investments, right? So he bought these art pieces, you know, with Black Album money, right? Like, so 1996, he bought probably a painting for like $400,000, which was like, oh, that's way too much. Flash forward 10 years later, right? He sells it for like $3 million.
Yeah.
Pretty good fucking investment.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, they're not dumb. And they're also probably people that I wouldn't want to hang out with unless I could like party with them in like 1986.
Yeah.
Drink beer and stuff. I wouldn't want to hang out with Lars sober.
Their movie they did, which was part fictional, part concert movie.
Forgot about that piece.
To the, what was that called? To the,
it was like,
not to the Wonder. What was that called?
God damn it.
I'm trying to remember. But Through the Never.
Through the Never, that's it.
Through the Never. So Kirk Hammett came to Dallas for that. And he didn't even do interviews, but he came to the theater for the press screening. And I actually showed up because I thought we would actually get to interview him, but no. But he was wasted. You could smell alcohol of him from across the hall in North Park. And he forgot what city he was in. And he just kind of, hey guys, it's the movie. Later. That was it.
Yeah, dude. Well, I mean, you know, Kirk Hammett is a very overrated, to me, guitar player. He always does the same thing, right? But he owns one of the most, like, sought-after prized possession guitars in the world. He owns it. It's the Les Paul that Peter Green that started Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
He owns this guitar, and he bought it, I think, for like $2 million. It's an incredible, incredible guitar, but he owns it. And I'm like, man, that's probably like the last person that should own that guitar. Yeah, I'm sure, because he's not, I mean.
Yeah.
It's like, fucking come on, dude. Give it to Eric Clapton or something. Like, you're kind of not deserving of that guitar. I would tell him that, too.
Metallica has sold over 125 million albums worldwide as of this year.
Yeah, there you go. I mean.
You take that into account, 125 million, just albums.
Albums, yeah.
Just albums.
How many people do you think they've played in front of?
Yeah. That and merch.
Triple that number?
Yes.
Like,
oh,
how
yeah.
do you even begin to do the figure that, calculate that?
Okay, so 125 million times what?
I don't even know how to get an accurate assessment of it, because the number is, it's too goddamn many is what it is.
it's too goddamn many. So we were talking about the Black Album, you know, the one with Inner Sandman on it. And I guess recently, this year, Metallica is going to release a remastered re-release of this album, of this year. I don't know. I don't think it's come out yet. But more power to them, because I know that album's hard to find. I have an original, like the original one.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, in the 90s, you know, the record thing had kind of, CDs had taken over. And then Napster took over CDs. Like, that's like the progression of it. Like, when you look at it that way.
Right.
It's the same thing. It's just, it's a format takeover, but it wasn't, there was no format.
Yeah.
You know, you could burn a disc. You know, a CD of something you downloaded off Napster,
yeah.
right? But... Yeah, man, the Black Album was, I don't know, man. I don't ever need to, I revisit that album every now and then. Like, there's a song on there called A Wolf and Man that's really good, but most people, that's the album when they think Metallica, that's the one they know.
Well, because it has, you know, Wherever I May Roam, Nothing Else Matters, and Inner Sandman, which are the three ones people mostly go to.
And then, you know,
but I think Sanitarium is probably better than any of those songs combined.
Dude. Fucking Orion, right? Like on Master of Puppets,
yeah.
Like instrumental.
Yeah.
Like that's, you want to know what Metallica sounds like? That's it.
Yes.
It's not fucking that song, She Ain't My Bitch.
Right? Yeah.
Like, you push it up, you push it up. That's not fucking Metallica.
No.
I mean, Metallica is like Call of the Cthulhu, you know, and like fucking Jump in the Fire, right?
Yeah.
But so here's the thing with me and Metallica, though, is Metallica, there's a band called Diamond Head that came out in like 1977 or so.
Okay.
British band. And they had an album called Lightning to the Nations. And that album is basically the blueprint for what would be the first four Metallica albums. They lifted every fucking riff from that Diamond Head record, put more distortion on it, and played it faster, but all the guitar parts are exactly the same. So anyone that is like isn't familiar with Diamond Head, go check this album out. Just listen to it from front to back. It's great. It's kind of, it's like a singer's almost like a Robert Plant type voice, right?
So in Diamond Head, on their Wikipedia page, there is an actual gigantic section that says influence on Metallica.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it's, I'm telling you, like, if you just listen to that album, if you just put it on, listen to it from front to back, if you're a Metallica fan, your brain will go, I just heard every Metallica, I've heard every Metallica song that I love. I just heard it. It's unfucking.
Yeah, it's called Diamond Head, and they formed in 1976 before Metallica.
Oh yeah, like way before Metallica. But they were, is it self titled or is it called Lightning to the Nations? I thought it was called Lightning to the
Nations. It's called Lightning to the Nations. Okay, that was their first album.
And that album came out, and here's the ironic thing. There's another weird Metallica tie-in, is when that album came out, they didn't put anything on it. They didn't put their name on it, on the front of it. It was just a white album cover.
Yeah.
Right?
Lightning to the Nations?
Yeah, I think so.
So
There's an alternate cover of it that came out later.
Okay.
They re-released it, but when they originally put it out, they released it as like the Beatles, like white album. It was just a white album cover. So with what I just said about you listen to that particular album from them, it's all Metallica, right? Flash forward fucking 20 years, right? Metallica fucking puts out what? The Black Album?
Yeah.
Like, Metallica's always been very vocal about, like, they're a Diamond Head fan. They're fans of Diamond Head.
Yeah.
Even, I think, on multiple tours, they've had Diamond Head as the opener.
That, and I think they've had Diamond Head play with them and other things, in their albums.
They're getting fucking, Diamond Head is on the fucking bankroll, dude. They're getting paid to just, hey, take this money, just let us play these songs. You know, like, I'm telling you, dude, if you listen to that album, and you'll kind of think of Metallica in a different light again after you hear that. They're still great,
right?
But they were never, you know, fucking Saint Anger, dude. Like, every time I think of that song, I can hear that like kettle drum snare sound from it, like that fucking. It's like, who gave the 4-year-old drumstick? It's horrible. And then
Ulrich was trying to do something.
God, dude, and fucking Bad Drummer, like in this some kind of monster, right? Remember when they're trying to play? It's just horrible, man.
Yeah, it's. See that documentary.
Yeah,
don't see Through the Never because it's not good.
See Through the Never also because that's like, it's kind of like, remember that Aerosmith game where you shot CDs? It was a shooting arcade game.
Oh, no, I remember that.
It's like a combination of like that video game and like some bad virtual reality bullshit thing. See what I mean? Like, again, the circle is complete.
Yeah, there it is. It's
virtual reality ain't fucking good. Hence, right, the fucking Metallica.
Yeah.
That, it's a virtual world, right? Isn't it like some sort of post-apocalyptic fucking...
No, yeah.
They got to get the gear to the concert type thing. Like Detroit Rock City, remember that movie?
I can't believe we really didn't bring that up last week with Kiss.
Fucked up, dude. Dropped the ball. It's because we didn't have any fun gummy bears, man.
That's true.
Like, fun gummy bears are fun.
Detroit Rock City is a fantastic movie.
Great movie. I'll talk about that right now. Well, I feel like we haven't bashed Metallica enough, actually. like, I think it's your turn. I wish we could take phone calls. It'd be awesome if Lars was like,
we hear this
smacking his gum, right? Like, y'all, why are you talking about?
Well, their last album was Hardwired to Self-Destruct 2 years ago,
and that's actually not a very bad album. That's probably their best album since the Black Album.
Yeah, it sold over 5 million copies worldwide, and critical reception is pretty much mostly positive for it. They might be coming. I mean, it's not nowhere near that you'd want them to be from their earlier stuff, but you know, I guess from Saint Anger and whatnot. Yes, that's something to get in on.
Maybe not. I mean, it's a listenable album. You know what? We almost missed over a fucking huge landmine, right? I'm going to step right onto this one. You remember that fucking album they did with Lou Reed? Metallica and Lou Reed?
Metallica and Lou Reed.
It's an album called Lulu, and it is hands down. What were we talking about last week that was like maybe the worst album of all time? Like the Shags or something like that. Okay, so this
In 2011, Lou Reed, yes, call it just L-U-L-U, Lulu.
Yeah, it's got a mannequin with no arms on the front
of
it. Yeah, that's an album where, like, if you know, if they want to get rid of waterboarding, right, like, don't waterboard people to get information on them, give them a fucking pair of headphones and put that album on repeat for them. They'll tell you anything you want.
Yeah, that was not really reviewed favorably.
It would be like if Shel Silverstein did like spoken word over like ABBA music. Right? Like you listen to this album and you're like, fucking what is going on right now? It's unlistenable.
Essayist and pop culture writer Chuck Klosterman, he probably heard of,
yeah,
in his review for this album, Lulu, wrote, "If the Red Hot Chili Peppers acoustically covered the 12 worst Primus songs for Starbucks, it would still be slightly better than this."
Oh, that's a great... He couldn't...
Nailed
couldn't,
it.
Yeah, couldn't... I think what I said was pretty close. So, yeah. You know, like, Shel Silverstein meets fucking ABBA.
Yeah.
But I'm... Oh, dude, it is a... If you are a music fan, run out and get that. That is what you call a mind melter. But yeah, it's like Lou Reed like talking.
Yeah, well, you don't want Lou Reed talking. You want Lou Reed from the Velvet Underground.
I don't want Lou Reed, period, man.
Not, Velvet Underground, Lou Reed. You want?
I'm not a fan. That's a band I don't get, man. I don't get like Andy Warhol, right? Like, what's so great?
Nico
about
and
yeah. But what's so great about a fucking picture of a banana? Like, that's where we got a society, right? Like, people were that dumb.
It's called pop art. Yellow banana, you peel it back, it's a pink banana.
Yeah, fucking pop.
It's the dick.
Well, that's a whole other topic. A whole other thing, discussion, because I'm pretty opinionated on that, dude. I don't understand that appeal, but...
Well, we'll have to save him for another time, because I can go to his 24-hour-long movies, which don't make sense, but...
Yeah, gaudy fucking... self-indulgent bullshit. Like,
yeah.
Not into it, man. From some, like, junkie loser that hit chicks. Like, I'm good. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not into that.
But you take somebody like Lou Reed, present day, pretty much, and pair him with Metallica. Of course, Metallica and Lou Reed were going to... Well, they wanted to work together. However, I remember they did, like, something live on live TV, and it was terrible.
I don't remember that. I mean, I'm sure they tour. I mean, I think they played a couple of shows maybe for that.
No, I think they did something. Yeah, but yes. Ugh, good God.
It sounds like a, if you've ever been in like a practice, like a rehearsal space before where there's multiple rooms, like you walk into a building and there's like different rehearsal rooms where bands are practicing.
Yeah.
That album sounds like 8 different bands like playing together.
Yeah.
With like an old man that's lost, like asking questions through the whole thing. Like, why am I here and stuff like that? Read the song name. Look up the song name.
The song names to that are Brandenburg Gate, The View.
All right, hold on. I got to not laugh for a minute.
Brandenburg Gate. And then The View, then Pumping Blood, Mistress Dread, Iced Honey, Cheat on Me, Frustration, Little Dog, Dragon, and Junior Dad.
Enough said. That, I feel like you just read that Paul Simon track list again. I mean, which one's better? You know what? We'll listen to both of those albums when that Paul Simon comes out.
Okay.
Well, you know what we should do? See if it's like some weird, like, Dark Side of the Moon Wizard of Oz thing. What if you played the new Paul Simon album on top of Lulu and they worked together?
That would be insane.
Right? Could recipe for success, right? How could that fail?
We will try it. All right. That is our second episode of The Unbalanced Note. We are 90 minutes in. We thank you for listening.
Yeah, 90 minutes. That's like the Black Album.
That is like the Black Album. I'm Brian Kluger, and I'm joined by the co-host with the most, Jacob Douglas. I think you can find Jacob in numerous bands, perhaps. You can find him at Good Records, and you can find him, I believe, on Instagram as what? Scrumchulescence?
Scrumchulescence. That anyone out there who knows what that is will totally appreciate the name.
Yes, they will. It's
James Lipton.
I'm going to make up a word now.
Dare I make say, up a word. You might also find me at Bunny Galore's next live performance. Burlesque. I need to get this autographed.
We'll see what we can do for you. But yeah, we're the Unbalanced Note on the Multimedia Men podcast. Look us up on boomstickcomics.com as well. We love you. Thank you for listening. Listen to some Metallica and Crisscross. Same band.
Mashup, dude.